Okay. Well, welcome everybody to the Accessible Technology webinar series. I'm Judith Stark, an Accessible Technology Consultant for the Pacific ADA Center. The Accessible Technology webinar series is sponsored by both the Pacific ADA Center and the Great Lakes ADA Center, both of whom are members of the ADA National Network. And a big thanks to Great Lakes for providing us with this platform in which to provide the webinar. We're very grateful to be working with them again. This is our third year of doing this, and we're looking forward to another great series with them. Before we begin, a few housekeeping items. We will be having questions, and Kiera is happy to accept questions during the presentation. If you'd like to submit a question, please do so through the chat room, which should be on your screen. We will also submit those questions on your behalf to Kiera at various times during the session. So if you put them in the window, we will be sure to collect them and be sure to give them to Kiera as we go along. Today's session is being recorded and will be archived on the www.ada-audio.org website. That's www.ada-audio.org. website. You will receive an email with the link to the archive as soon as it is available. Please give us a few days to get that up. The session does have real-time captioning available. The CC symbol is up on the top of your screen. If you click on the icon, you'll open a dialog box where captioning can be viewed, and the window can be resized and moved anywhere on your screen. There is also an activity window that can be opened, and that is through the window menu at the top of your screen, or you can click on Control/, and that will open that window for you. Please note that during this particular session, we will be having an interactive period during which it will be a little more tricky for screen readers to interpret what Kiera is saying. However, she will be giving a full audio description of what she is doing. After the session, the handout of the session will be emailed to you along with an evaluation survey. So please take a couple of minutes just to fill out that survey. It's really helpful for us in planning for future events. So having said that, today's session we're going to be talking about making tactile graphics. And our presenter, I'm very delighted to welcome, is Kiera van Gerven, and I hope I've pronounced her name correctly. She is an Access Technology Content Specialist at the National Federation of the Blind, where she's worked on tactile graphics, low vision, web accessibility, and many other access technology topics over the last 5 years. She's also a regular presenter both on this and other topics, and edits the Access Technology blog on the National Federation of the Blind website. Worth checking it out. This particular presentation is going to provide an overview of how to create tactile graphics, and we'll compare the merits of different software and hardware packages available for making and using them. With the help of demonstrations and so on, Kiera will really highlight how these come about. So having said that, I'd like to welcome Kiera and hand the microphone over to you, and please go ahead with your presentation.
All right. Thanks so much, Judith. I'm delighted to be doing this webinar. I have to say it's an entirely new concept for me to do tactile graphics over in this format, as I'm used to handing out demos. So I'll apologize ahead of time that I can't actually do that. It does make it easier. I have images, which, of course, for the blind folks here won't do you much good, though there are alt tags attached to that. I'll do my best to describe it. I do want to do demos, which, as Judith mentioned, will not be screen reader accessible because of the Illuminate software. So if there's anything that I'm describing that's not clear, please feel free to put a comment in the chat, and I will do my best to elucidate. So, as mentioned, I work with the National Federation of the Blind, and I've done quite a bit of tactile graphics in that capacity. One of the most educational for me and most fun projects that I've worked on is a youth slam that we run every 2 years, which is very focused on science, technology, engineering, and math. And produced all the tactile graphics for that, which, as mentioned, was a great deal of fun and did help students along quite a bit. To get this kicked off, what I would say is I want to explain why I, as the one-sided person on a team of access technology specialists, am the person to do the tactile graphics, and most of the tactile graphics creation. Well, the very simple reason for that is that while the software that exists to create tactile graphics is, for the most part, completely accessible to screen readers, it is obviously a visual task. And so the way that I create tactile graphics is always in partnership with one of my blind colleagues, often more than one. So I'll create something based on my experience and then go back to the to one of my colleagues for feedback. It's never an either-or situation where I create something in a void and think that I magically know what people would need.
Can I interrupt you just for one second? Could I ask you just to move your mic a little bit away from your mouth?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Better?
Just say something again.
Is that better?
Yes, I think that is a little bit. Okay, carry on. Clara, I'm sorry, I think we seem to have lost you now.
Can you hear me now?
That's better, thank you.
Okay, excellent. Folks, I see that there's still some more echoing issues. I don't know if that's resolved now.
I think just carry on if you can. Just keep the mic a little bit away from your mouth and try not to move your head too much is probably the best advice at this stage. But carry on. Thank you.
Okay. Well, this just goes to show that you can test things for infinity time and still have them break when you try to use them. That's certainly something I've experienced many times. Judith, I don't know if you want to talk about the webinar features or whether you want me to go through that.
We have spoken about that, as Clara has mentioned. Certainly the closed captioning, which is the CC icon on the top of your screen, or Control F, will bring up the closed captioning. And then once again, questions, please feel free to enter questions in the chat room. But we're not going to be using emoticons or hand-raising features during this session.
Thanks, Judith. All right. So let me start off with a little bit of a definition of tactile graphics. I expect many of you have seen different forms of tactile graphics, and actually would be very grateful if you'd be willing to put some of that information about, you know, have you used tactile graphics and have you created tactile graphics in the chat. Tactile graphics are images designed to be explored by touch. That covers quite a bit of ground, and there's quite a bit of research out there about how people learn that shows that actually if you can get 3D object, that's, that works much better for learning. However, the reality is that is a little bit harder. Okay, I'm seeing that there's still some audio issues.
Clara, would you just hold on one second while we get some suggestions? Thank you. I'm sorry, folks, we seem to be having some audio problems at the moment. Please could you confirm, are you hearing me clearly? If you can just add your comments into the chat box as to whether my voice is clear or if it is just our speaker at this point. Okay, Kira, I think if you can possibly just go ahead, see what happens as you adjust your microphone a little bit, that might help, but otherwise I'm not sure that there's very much else. It appears to be just on your side that we're having that issue, but please go ahead anyway.
Okay, well, I'm sorry about that again. As mentioned, we did test this beforehand and did not have any problems, but I'm sorry for any audio issues. I'll talk as clearly as I can. So that's the quick little intro about what tactile graphics are. Again, if anybody has any feedback about how you've, whether you've created tactile graphics and whether you've used tactile graphics and what kind of tactile graphics you've used, I'd love to see that from people just to get an idea of what your experience is. All right, on to the next slide, which is what makes a good tactile graphic. There are obviously different opinions about that, and up until quite recently, there wasn't really a standard for that. There is now the BANA standard for tactile graphics that's available, and that is a good guideline. It's very, very in-depth and comprehensive. I'm going to give just a few bullet points based on my experience of creating tactile graphics. The first and most obvious thing that you have to take into account when creating tactile graphics is that tactile graphics obviously do not function in the same way that images do, visual images do, because you can't accommodate the same density of information. So the way to tackle that is by making your tactile graphics not too complex and to use clear outlines. In fact, for the most part, what I use is outline drawings. Then the other item, which ties into what I'm saying about density of information, is that you have to respect a different spacing. Again, there's different opinions about that. I've heard half an inch is a minimum distance. I've seen people use it differently. It also depends on your reader, but certainly half an inch seems like a good sort of spacing. Then the next thing that you can use to create differentiation within the tactile graphic is using different heights. Depending on what material you're using, that may be more or less difficult to achieve. And again, how much difference in height people can detect will depend on your individual reader. Then the other thing that you can use to convey information is contrasting textures. Contrasting textures are going to apply most when you're doing low-tech tactile graphics and you're using different actual materials. But there's other ways to represent that with some of the methods that I'll be talking about presently. As I mentioned, a lot depends on the experience of the person reading the tactile graphic. I tend to err on the side. Okay, so apparently we're having some pretty major audio problems. Judith, I don't know if you want me to see if I can swap out the microphone. Apparently yesterday this was fine, but it isn't right now.
I think maybe if you can try that, do you have one easily at hand? Also, try adjusting the microphone just a little bit more. Will that work?
Try the microphone in every position. Let me see if I can find another microphone.
folks, I'm sorry that we will have a little bit of a delay in the webinar while Clara sees if she can find another microphone. In the meantime, I would like to ask people the question whether anybody has in fact used tactile graphics in the past. What is your experience either as a user of the graphics or in fact has anybody created them themselves? It would be interesting to get a feel for the level of familiarity with tactile graphics. So if anybody does have anything to say, please, if you could enter that into the chat room, that would be very interesting for all of us to check. So once again, I do apologize for the sound problem that we're having. Hopefully we can get that resolved fairly shortly. From my point of view, tactile graphics has always been something that I'm very interested in. I have not personally had experience with it, so it is an area of interest to me.
It seems as though we have a couple of people that are pretty familiar with tactile graphics and one individual who has not used it before. I'm on the end where I have not used tactile graphics, and so I'm really looking forward to this presentation.
One of the things possibly a little bit aside from an actual graphic, but one of the nicest things that I came across as a tactile bit of information was in the city of Cambridge in England, where they in fact have a tactile map of the city made in bronze. It's a very large, probably about 2 or 3 feet across, tactile map of the whole city, and that was a very wonderful thing to experience. Not quite on paper form, but in real life, it was a lovely experience.
Well, it seems as though Claire is testing her audio setup now, so we should know something pretty soon. Once again, we do apologize for the difficulties that you're having with the audio, but you know, oftentimes, no matter how much you test technology, it's up to the moment as to whether or not it's going to actually work properly for you.
Sorry, Celestine, I'm just seeing that people are not able to send or see any.
Now, even though they may not be able to see the messages, we are able to see all messages that are sent through the chat area. We just try to keep the chat area clear from participants so that it doesn't distract the presenter so much.
Okay, I've just I'm trying a different microphone. Does this work any better?
That does seem to be working better, Claire.
Okay, great. Well then, I see that some people are still having the same issue. Okay. Well, let me move ahead then. So I was talking about the difference in textures and heights. Much depends on your reader. And I err on the side of having more contrast, just because if people haven't been exposed to tactile graphics a great deal, it will be harder for them to interpret different heights and textures. A few other considerations that are worth taking into account when you're creating tactile graphics is consistency and representation. That's going to apply mostly if you're working to create different tactile graphics for a same class or a same group of activities, where you want to make sure that you use the same symbols. For example, if you're creating a map and you're using a star symbol to symbol,
sorry, to signify the capital city of a state, then you'll want to keep that the same throughout. Durability is going to depend on your setting. If it's a typographic that you're going to reuse or that the student is going to be using a lot, then that's something to look out for. Exactness, I'll come back to that. That's going to apply mostly or most importantly to math and science topics where you want to make sure that your visual representation actually matches the math. Time to read. Well, let me give you an example before I go into that a great deal. When we had the Junior Science Academy here 2 years ago, I created a big flowchart for the students. They loved the flowchart, but it took them, 10 minutes, 15 minutes to really go through that and understand it. So if you're doing something that's big, make sure that there's enough time for people to read it. And then I actually will have to apologize here because I, for the BANA guidelines, the site that's listed there, taxonographics.org, is a great information site. But if you want to go directly to the BANA guidelines, that link is actually www.brailleauthority.org/tg/web-manual/index.html, or you can just Google BANA guidelines and that will get you there as well. Then, to go straight into the embosser part of creating tactile graphics, many embossers have the ability to do higher resolution. There's a couple of examples of that I can list for you. There's more, but to give you some idea, the Juliet Pro, or really rather all of the Juliet models, the Braille embossers, the Braille Express, the Braille Bookmaker, the Romeo 25, all of these have the ability to do tactile graphics. And you can create those with TGD Pro, which is sold by Duxbury. The upside of that is that you don't have to purchase a special embosser or special equipment to create tactile graphics. The downside of that is that you will not get the kind of detailing that you would get on a specialized embosser or on special equipment. It is fast, and with TGD Pro you can also create 12-form graphics, and it can import graphs from scientific notebooks. I would argue that it's a little harder to use that with TGD Pro, which by the way stands for Tactile Graphics Designer Pro. It's a little harder to use it in TGD Pro than it is in some of the other packages. I've already mentioned some of the cons, which is that it's lower resolution, it's less flexible, and for me the big glaring thing is that right now TGD Pro only works with XP machines or older. So if you have a new machine, you're out of luck. And that's a pretty major issue. And I spoke to Duxbury yesterday, and there doesn't seem to be a plan to get that worked out anytime very soon. Then, swell form. I would imagine that many of you are familiar with a swell form paper. How that works, for those of you who are not familiar, it's a really simple process. You create a tactile graphic however you want, really. On a computer, you can print off an image, you can, you know, draw something with a Sharpie, and then you copy that image onto special heat-sensitive paper. And then you run that paper through a copier. And once you have that, you run it through the special swell form machine that was shown on the previous page, which is sort of, to put it bluntly, it's a glorified toaster oven. You feed the paper through, it heats it up, and that creates a raised line drawing. It's very sturdy material, so if it's something that you want to reuse, it actually will survive being handled by students a lot quite well. But creating Braille with this and having a lot of Braille text on there is a lot harder because, like a toaster oven, the heat on these is not always exactly equal, and so it's hard to get consistent and well-defined Braille and to balance between having a well-defined image and well-defined Braille. So that can be a little bit tricky, and I would not use it for anything that requires a lot of Braille. I would put the Braille, I would do the Braille on an embosser in that case. The other issue with the Swell form paper is that it's harder to produce in large quantities. If you want 50 of these, you're going to have to feed them through a copier two or three at a time. I have tried to do more than that, and inevitably the copier melts my paper. You're also paying a lot of money per page, because it's about $1 a page. And so, again, if you're doing 50, that just costs you $50, assuming that you had no mishaps. And it requires a copier or an HP inkjet printer, which are getting incredibly hard to obtain. So that's a little bit about the Swell form. And again, if anyone has any input about having used Swell form machines or anything like that, please feel free to put that in the chat box. Then the next process I want to touch on, and I'll touch on this just briefly, since it's not technically tactile graphics creation, it's more tactile graphics copying. Thermoform machines, I have an image of the Big Beast up on screen, and for those of you who can't see that, it's a big metal piece that you, with dials on the front, and you pull the case over the top of it. That creates a vacuum over a sheet of plastic that is then also heated and pulled down over the top of whatever image that is underneath. To comment on one of the questions in the chat room, why does it have to be an HP inkjet printer to use with thermoform? Well, that's what I've been told by the manufacturer. Apparently, there's variations in how much ink content you need and how much you need for it to work, for you to print directly on the thermoform paper. So that's why HP, that's the manufacturer's recommendation. But back to the thermoform. So the thermoform, what you would do is you would put an existing tactile graphic onto the machine. You would put a sheet of the special plastic paper over the top, and it functions as a copier. You can do it for existing Braille, but where it really comes in handy, according to me, is when you have created a low-tech tactile graphic. You know, you've done something with different fabrics, you've cut them out, whatever you've done, and you want to reproduce it because you otherwise have just one copy. That's where this machine comes in really handy. And I don't know if it's worth, I'm not going to mention prices for all of these. The prices are included in the presentation materials. If there's anything that specifically you would like to know about, I can certainly mention that. But while I'm on the topic, the thermoform machines go for between $2,675 and $3,625. So that's the thermoform in machine in a nutshell. The advantages of that is that it does give you some really well-defined shapes, and you get better height from thermoform than almost any of the other products that I'll be discussing. It's pretty durable as long as you don't squash it, and it's pretty flexible in the sense that you can, like I mentioned, copy just about anything. Disadvantages is that it's very, very manual. You have to still come up with a tactile graphic somehow, and copies do vary, again, because you get some heat variation. As the machine heats up, you do get some variation. And perhaps an obvious point, but I'll mention it anyway, you do have to be careful with heat-sensitive materials. If you put anything that's heat-sensitive under there, it will melt. So just be mindful of that. Then on to the next tool, which is the one that I use by far the most, which is the ViewPlus Tiger software suite with the ViewPlus Tiger series of embossers. What that provides you with is obviously they create specialized embossers that do higher resolution tactile graphics. They'll also do Braille, but really what they're best at is tactile graphics. that those embossers are then bundled with software that provides you an easy way to create tactile graphics. How that works in practice, I'll show you in just a minute. It's one of the things I do want to demonstrate. But it makes it very easy to create print labels that you can then translate into Braille. Once you have the file, you can produce as many as you want to, since you can just send them to the embosser and create as, and emboss as many as you wish. It creates consistent Braille and will handle Braille and graphics and tactile graphics together very well. And it also works with Excel. Again, I'll demonstrate that in just a minute. Disadvantage of the ViewPlus Tiger software suite is that it is time-consuming, although I don't really know a method that to produce tactile graphics that is not at all time-consuming. But it does take a little bit of learning. It's a little bit more of a sophisticated tool. Another con that I want to list that's not on here, but I do want to mention, is that the software itself, the ViewPlus Tiger software suite, is finicky. They have, and they don't always document how you're how you should change things. To give you one example, at one point I had to reinstall a driver on one of our machines, and it turns out this is not documented, at least it wasn't at that point, that there's a specific order in which you have to install the drivers and then the software. And it's easy for one thing to get out of sequence and for that to break everything. So changing one piece can break some of the other pieces of the Tiger software suite. Just something to be aware of. And I've talked to other people who've used it and heard some of the same issues from them. So with that, I'm going to go straight into the demonstration. Again, if anybody's on here that's blind, feel free to let me know if I'm not explaining adequately. I will now share my desktop. And I will open up some of the demo files. I'll actually create a new document, because the way that, okay, sorry about that.
Can I just stop in for a second? For those who are watching the demo, you might find it helpful to make your screen full size, and you can scroll across the screen by using the vertical and horizontal scroll bars. That way you'll be able to see what Clara is doing on her demonstration. She's currently using her own desktop as her demonstration. So for those who are using screen readers, unfortunately this is not compatible with Illuminate, but she will be giving the audio description, and please feel free to comment in the chat room if you find that she has said something that you've missed, and she will be happy to repeat it for you. Thanks, Clara. Please carry on.
Thanks, Judith. So what I've done is I've opened up a regular Word document. Across the top, I have my usual series of menus, except that I also have a Tiger menu. What I'm going to do is I'm not going to go to the Tiger menu yet. I'm just going to insert an image. So I'm going to insert picture, and I'm opening up a picture from file, which I've got in my demo folder here, which is a very simple outline map of India and the bordering, a little bit of the bordering countries. So I insert that image. I can then adjust the size of that. I can edit that image, although I would recommend that you do your image editing outside of Word, since Word's really not suited for that. You can use any number of other software, including some free packages. But here's this outline image that I've just imported. Then what I would do to add in labels is, again, very straightforward. I would do insert text box, and it's automatically drawn a box here. I can type in that box whatever text I want as the label, which in this case is India. I am going to right-click that and format the text box, because I don't want it defaults to having an outline. So I'm just going to turn that off. That's whatever your preference is. I'm going to insert another text box here, because I want to also label China, which is the bordering country to the north. So I am typing that in. And then the other thing I might want to do, and it doesn't really very much matter at this point how big those boxes are. That's something that will have to be adjusted anyway. So the other thing I might want to do is insert a title. So I'm typing in map of India. This is about as simple as it gets with tactile images. Then that's where the Tiger menu comes into play. I choose the Tiger menu, and I say translate document. Now, I'm not going to go into this a great deal, but I'll just mention that the way it translates that document, whether it translates it into contracted or uncontracted Braille, whether it does print and Braille, is going to depend on how you set those settings in the formatter settings. So I'm just going to use my default that I've set up. I'm just going to an embosser. I don't use a print and a Braille embosser for this. And hit translate document. That has now translated all of the print labels I've created into Braille. I can then move those around as I like. So if I want the label for China to be a little bit more, a little closer to the border, I can change that. And then all I would really do is just send that to an embosser. That's a very straightforward software to use if you're familiar with Word, which I'm sure most of you are. So that's a very quick demo of how you create a tactile image in Word with the Tiger software suite. The other thing I want to demonstrate is Excel. Since I mentioned that it does do Excel, so what I have here is I've got some, let me do this from scratch. Bear with me one second here. So I've got some dummy data, which is some old Dow Jones Index figures. So I've got two columns of data with the title of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I create a new document. I'm pasting in that data. And what I would do then, and I see that there's a question about adding labels. I'll come back to that in just a minute. So what I would then do is select that data. You can also select it later, but this is a little quicker. And then use the insert chart to create a chart. I'm going to choose a line chart since that works well with this data. What works best is going to be down to who you're doing it for, what kind of data you're using, and so forth. Then I just follow the chart wizard through. The only thing I'm really going to change from the default in this, or that you really need to change from the default for it to work well, is that you create the chart in a new sheet as opposed to in the existing sheet. That will automatically create that chart. Then next step is same as before. I go into the Tiger menu and I hit translate document. It asks me whether I want to translate all the sheets. You can choose whether you want to translate just that sheet that you have selected at that point or everything. I'm going to choose to translate everything. It will leave my original data intact. So you'll see if I go to sheet 1, that still has the data I started with. It still has my original chart. But I now have a Braille chart. One important thing that I want to highlight here that is going to come up if you're going to create these tactile graphics in Tiger Software Suite with Excel is you'll notice that the Braille on the x-axis doesn't look right. That's because it's not. I'm going to do a format axis on this, and the reason is that the Braille doesn't quite fit, and it tries to fit it visually, but it doesn't actually work. So usually what you'll have to do is change the number of categories and do fewer category labels or do fewer ticks. I usually do both because then the labels and the tick marks match up. But again, it's going to depend on what kind of data you're using. So I'm changing from one tick mark per category to four categories to a tick mark. And I'm going to do the same thing for the labels. And now at the bottom of the page, it displays the Braille correctly. So that's just something to know that, again, it's not necessarily in the documentation. That's a very quick demo. I'll now answer the questions. There's been a question asking about whether you can change labels once the document has been translated. Yes, you can. What you would do, though, is you can translate just a particular text label. It ends up being tricky. What I would say is if you have Duxbury available, translate whatever text you want in Duxbury and copy it in. I've had bad results with trying to add in Braille with the Tiger software in a document that was already translated. The other thing I do is I keep a backup copy of my untranslated document, and if I need to make major changes, that's usually where I'll make the changes. Then the other question is, can you purchase the Tiger software without the embosser, and do I have an estimate for the software only? The answer is yes. You can, in fact, get extra licenses. You'll get a license of the software when you buy an embosser, but you can purchase it separately. I believe it's about $500, so you might want to check that. I don't have the number right here. However, it is set up to work with the Tiger embosser, so that's where you're going to get the best results. I'm getting one more question. Could these techniques be used to emboss overlays that could be put over printed maps or maps on wayfinding signs? I would say that's a little bit trickier. You could, it's hard to have, with these embossers, it's hard to use something that's robust enough to really work on wayfinding signs. I know that we don't do it that way just because you would wear the Braille out too quickly. So technically possible, but not particularly recommended. So that wraps up my demo of the Tiger software suite. There's much more to say about that, but I won't give you all of that information. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me after this. So I'm going to quickly go back to the PowerPoint, and then I'll do one more demo. So I'm just going to close this out, and then I'm going to go back to the presentation. So the next thing I want to talk about is actually the youngest of the tactile graphics embossers. That's to say, Enabling Technologies came out recently with the Phoenix embossers. The Phoenix embosser, well, for those of you who are familiar with Enabling Technologies, or at least for me, as being pretty familiar with the Enabling Technologies embossers, I was pretty excited about this because Enabling Technologies makes some pretty sturdy and some pretty reliable embossers. So when the Phoenix came out, you know, we got it immediately, and we've been testing with that as well. It does a high resolution tactile graphics. It does have, if you're familiar with the View Plus embossers, you'll know that they have a pyramid shaped Braille. You don't get that with the Phoenix. The Phoenix does better Braille, to be quite blunt. And it is bundled with a simple translator and a graphics editor. So that's quite nice. It's a very simple interface. I find it a little bit limiting compared to the functionality that you get with the Tiger software suite. And you are somewhat limited also in the file types that you can import as images. One of the things that is missing right now in that list, for example, is PDF. So if you get an image in PDF, you can't edit it with Phoenix. You would have to convert the image elsewhere. one nice feature that it has is that you can also adjust the force of the impact, which really just results in different dot heights. So with that, I'm going to go back to sharing my desktop and showing you what that actually looks like. The software is the Tiger, see if I can get to that. It's the Firebird graphics. There's also the Firebird transcriber, which is really deals with Braille translation. I'm not going to deal with that right now. So the way that the Firebird graphic editor works with the Phoenix is that it gives you two windows. On the one side, you get the original image that you import. And on the right-hand side, you'll get the preview of what this will actually look like on an embosser. So let me open up the same file that I used before, the map of India. It's going to ask me to set up the page. I have it set currently to 11.5 by 11. I'm going to leave that. And then I can choose my resolution. I can go, the default setting is 17 dots per inch. I'm going to make that a little bit higher. It gives me a little bit of a better image. 25 dots per inch, I found that sometimes it punches through the paper. So that's just something to be aware of, that if that's the problem that you're seeing, that's probably where it's coming from. All right, and then I am going to open up the map. And so on the left, I have the map of India that you saw before. On the right, I have the preview of what that looks like on the Phoenix embosser. Then I'm going to try to do the exact same thing that I did before, which is add in some labels. I can do that with my drawing tools, and I can say add a label. Then I click wherever I want to put the label. I type in the print text that I want to be translated. I hit insert, and that actually inserts the label. Now, you cannot move this label once it's inserted, which I find to be a little bit of a disadvantage. But it does produce excellent Braille. Then I will add in the other label. I will add in the label for China. Same thing. And I go to my drawing tools. I go to add a label. I click where I want to put my Braille label. And then I type in the text that I want translated. Now, this does not give me the option of putting a title at the top because it's structured differently. So adding in a title for the document is a little bit trickier. But this gives you a good idea of what the final outcome would look like. And I really wish I could show you a sample. You can also do touch-ups to this image. So, for example, there's a slight gap in the outline of India, and I am going to say, I'm going to draw a line. I click to where I want the line to start, and it follows my arrow, and then I click where I want it to end, and then I hit escape, and that will then convert that line into a Braille dot. So there are some modifications you can do. You can also erase content if things are not looking the way you like. So, for example, if I want to erase the label I've created, I would use the erase block tool from the menu, and I can just draw a rectangle over whatever it is that I want erased, and that will erase it. So again, very quick demo of the Firebird graphic editor. So I'm going to close out of that and go back to the presentation. Okay, again, if anyone has any questions about the Firebird graphic editor, feel free to put that in the chat room. There are other ways to come by tactile graphics, including some ready-made solutions. The most impressive of those to me is what Touch Graphics has done with their STEM binder, which is an off-the-shelf LiveScribe pen that they've converted into being a talking pen that works with their tactile graphics. that gives you a lot of layers of information. Because the tactile graphic is large print, is tactile, it has tactile outlines, and then also has the audio that you get from the pen. The way it works is you get the tactile graphic, just like any other tactile graphic. For example, one that they did really, really well is that they did the table of elements, which is otherwise pretty hard to get that kind of information in a tactile graphic. So what you get is a tactile graphic outline of the table of elements with the Braille symbols for the elements. You tap it with a pen, and you get the name of the element. You tap it again, you get different layers of information. I think there's something like 7 or 8 layers of information. So there's a lot. I think that's a really great tool. Now, that is static content. What that means is you have to use what they have created for you, which are going to be standard materials. But for something that is as commonly used as a table of elements, I think it's really fantastic. I think they've really done a great job. I just thought there was a question asking about the price of Firebird compared to the Tiger. I'm assuming that you mean the embossers. The embossers from the View Plus side vary greatly. The one that we use that is a Premier, it was $10,000. That's a nice embosser. The Phoenix is $4,995, so it's a little bit less expensive. You can get the imprint as well from from View Plus that does print and Braille together. But we have one here, and to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't really recommend it. It just doesn't really have the capacity to do any kind of larger numbers of tactile graphics. But that's certainly an option that you have. So that's the stem binder, very quickly. As I said, I'm a big fan of this tool. I think it has great potential for education, and I look forward to Touch Graphics expanding the number of what they call apps, which are tactile graphics that then work with the pen. I'm just looking forward to seeing where they go with that. Then a few other options. The one element of the View Plus setup that I haven't mentioned is the iVeo, which is a tactile tablet that you can put a tactile graphic on, and that you can then that is tied into an SVG file, scalable vector graphics file, and can give you more information. I think it's a great concept. It's very time-consuming to create the SVG files to work with it, and then you have to carry around a tactile tablet. So I think in certain educational settings it can be useful. But there are a number of other solutions that you might find useful. One of those, particularly if you're in a setting where some of these things might already be on hand and might not be used at that point for tactile graphics. Some of these things have real potential. The most obvious thing is 3D printers. 3D printers will allow you to create objects in whatever, you know, into whatever shape you wish them to be. So if you have one of those on hand and you have someone that knows how to use CAD files or knows where to find CAD files, because a lot of these are available just on the internet, that's a great resource, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more depth in just a minute. There are milling machines, sewing machines. There's all sorts of ways that you could use, say, a sewing machine you could use to create some patterns. There are some that are now computer run, and something like that obviously has a great potential to create tactile materials in ways that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of. So I talked about 3D printing. I want to give you one example, and I'll tell you why I picked this example. I want to talk about the MakerBot replicator, which actually is not quite yet shipping. We have it on order, and it is eagerly awaited. MakerBot is well known for doing really pretty inexpensive 3D printers. This one starts at $1,749. Which if you compare to a Phoenix embosser at $4,995 is a pretty good deal. Now obviously the two do completely different things, but if you compare it to say a Roland MDX 40A that's about $10,000. That's, again, it's a pretty different picture. So what you can create with this is that you're using a type of hard plastic to create these models. You can use any CAD image that you can find on the internet or create yourself. And you can then print it out on the replicator. The maximum size is on the slide here is 8.9 inches by 5.7 by 5.9. So that's the size of a loaf of bread, which is really pretty good as a model. You can also get a second printer head, if I can call it that, extruder is what they call it, so that you can do different colors of on one model at the same time, so you can create something that's two colors. And at about $50 for a spool of ABS, that cost is really quite reasonable as 3D printers go. As I've mentioned a couple of times today, doing tactile graphics, whatever format, is time-consuming and often expensive. So I would encourage people to use what is already out there. Somebody in the chat pointed out there that APH has great tactile graphics. That's absolutely true. APH also has their image library, which is on the resource sheet as well, that hopefully you will all have gotten or will get. That's a great resource. They have a number of scientific drawings and other things that, again, particularly in education, are going to come in really handy. I've already mentioned touch graphics. There's creative adaptations for learning that will do learning materials. And then, of course, there's commercial models. If you want to, if you're trying to show a student the Eiffel Tower, then really a model is going to be the best way to explain what that really looks like. And those are commercially available. It's the beauty of the internet. You can now find just about anything. So that's a great resource. It seems like a really obvious point, but it's sometimes very easy to spend hours and hours and hours trying to create something that already exists. And it's worth checking some of these resources that I've listed in my resource document before you get to work. And that's what I've got for you today. As I mentioned, I do have a resource sheet as well. I don't know if it's worth going over some of that content. That it just essentially gives you some of the background and some of the links to the some of the products I've mentioned. It gives you a link to the image library from APH and so forth, and some of the resources that I use. So, if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thanks, Kara.
Judith, I lost you there for a minute, but let me pull up the resource.
Okay, Judith, are you having trouble with your microphone? We kind of lost you there for a minute. Oh, I see you're gone altogether. So if there are any questions that people have, please type your question into the chat area, and Claire will be happy to answer those questions. And I thought that was some really great information that she was providing us. So, Claire, I see that some people have asked if you have resources. Yes, there is a resource list that was posted on the website along with the materials.
Claire, this is Judith.
I am back again.
We do have some questions here. I don't know if you can see them, just for those who are not seeing all of the questions. One of them is, what type of organizations use these products? You gave some examples of educational settings and schools. Are there other industries where this is commonly used?
Yes, actually some of the other settings, education is the biggest customer. Both higher ed and high schools. There's a couple of different educational settings where these are used, but they're also used quite a bit for example, blind scientists. So people who work in an environment where it's really important to have access to some of the materials that might only be available as graphics. I see that there's also a question about small graphics for non-communicating child, similar to board maker icons. It depends on what kind of graphics you're looking for. Certainly, it would be fairly straightforward to find and create those. I don't know if there's anything that's really available that's pre-made. Your best source is probably going to be some of the APH images and some of the National Braille Press work.
Another question that I would have is, you've demonstrated very nicely more of images and so on in the creation of these images. How would imaging differ from something which would be more scientific? I'm thinking of mathematics or technical information, which might have a slightly different format to it. It's not quite so analog versus digital, if that's a good way of describing it.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. What you get with scientific information is it requires more precision, which is where the Excel graphs come in very handy. If you're graphing functions, for example, and actually that's part of what I did for the youth slam, is doing some of those materials. What the inherent limitation there is a lot of technical and a lot of scientific information is very, very dense. And you will have to compromise some on how much information you can actually fit on a page and supplement it with information that's provided either a soft copy or as hard copy Braille. So I see that some people are wanting me to go over the resource list. I'm certainly happy to do that. So what I've got on the resource list is, I'm referring to some of the guidelines and some of the things that I've used. And again, if you could please also look at the BrailleAuthority.org site, that's great. TactileGraphics.org has a lot of information about tactile graphics and about how to create them and what resources are out there. Then aph.org/edresearch/guides.htm, it has some further information. And there's another one that I've used as a basic reference guide for how to create tactile graphics, that's www.nctd.org.uk/whatartgs.asp. That gets you some of those some of that information. Then I mentioned using image editing software, because Word is really terrible for editing images. It really is extremely limited. The one that I use that's free, you can obviously, if you have something more powerful, if you have Photoshop, you know how to use it, by all means use it. I use Paint.net. It's really simple, but it allows me primarily to strip out information and to get images to look a little bit more like what I want them for in the tactile graphics. Then, obviously, there's a number of resources for the View Plus Tiger embossers. The main resource is www.viewplus.com, which has product information. I would also go to their download sections, because they do have some prefab examples. Again, don't reinvent the wheel. They've got some maps and things and some geographical materials and math that you might find useful. Oh, and the tool is called paint.net. So you actually just go to www.paint.net, and that will take you to the software, and you can download it right there, and it's free. Then I have a number of resources on Swellform, both sample graphics and product information. I don't know if it's worth going over all of that. There's a design manual as well for the PF, so that's worth taking a quick look at. Then there's software information for Duxbury, which is duxburysystems.com. That will take you to the product information there. I have a short section on on thermoforming machines. You can find product information for those machines on www.americanthermoform.com, and that can take you to the different products that they sell that are thermoform machines. And then, obviously, you can go to the Breller.com site to look at the Phoenix product information. So that's www.breller.com, and then just look for the Phoenix. They've got a big banner up on the page. Oh, yes, I just saw that there's a question about the about paint.net, and you are correct, it is getpaint.net. So then the other item I touched on is touch graphics on the stem binder. I have the link in the resources directly to the store to all of the stem materials, but you can find it by going to www.touchgraphics.com, and that will give you some of their other tactile materials as well, because they have a tactile atlas as well, and a number of other materials that you might find of interest. Then I have some general tactile graphics information, which, as mentioned, refers to the imagelibrary.aph.org/main.jsp page. That is the main page for their library of tactile graphics, which I highly recommend you look at if you're going to create tactile graphics. I already mentioned the touch graphics site. Then creative adaptations for learning you can find at www.cal-s.org, so www.cal-s.org. And National Braille Press will also have some tactile materials. You can find www.nbp.org. So let me switch back to the Illuminate window. And see if there's any further questions. I see that there's a question about the Romeo and Juliet embossers and how they can do tactiles. Well, you can do tactiles for Romeo and Juliet embossers with either QuickTac, which is available from Duxbury, or Tactile Graphics Designer, which is a little bit more powerful, that's also available from Duxbury. And you can use those to create graphics for the Juliet or Romeo embossers. So that's how you would do that. I don't know if there's any other questions about either the resources or any of the other topics I've talked about today. I've shortened things a little bit since we've got a bit of a late start.
Kara, thank you. Just other question. You mentioned the kinds of images that are best to use, and some of them obviously are better than others. You also, in our discussion before we started this, mentioned that at some stage during the creation of tactile graphics that you do need some sighted assistance with some things and some that do not need sighted assistance. Can you give us an idea of where and how the accessibility of graphics really is good and where you find that it is really still lacking?
Well, let me address the question of what makes a good source image for a tactile graphic first. The best things to create a tactile graphic from is something that's already a fairly straightforward outline drawing. Outline maps, things that don't have a lot of color to them, those things are going to work best. If you're looking at, say, an image of a sun, like a photo of a sunset, is an example of the worst possible thing that you can use to create a tactile graphic from. Anything that has gradations of color, you're not going to convey. And I quite often will recreate images from scratch if I think that the source image that I've been given is too much work to strip down, because something like that, like a sunset, it's going to be easier for me to draw a diagram, for that matter. I think it would make more sense in that case to do a description rather than a tactile image, unless there's a particular reason to do so, than it is to try to find a way to do a tactile image of that. So simple images with good spacing and where the information is not too dense. Another example that I can give is, at one point I did a tactile map of actually the building that I'm in right now, which is quite a sizable building. That works reasonably well if you have blueprints. However, blueprints have a lot of information, and you have to sacrifice some of that to be able to make it into a tactile map. So I stripped out all of the information about, where the cooling system was and where there were vents and so forth. That is great if you're looking at it as an architect, but is not going to be so relevant as if you're trying to get your bearings in the building. So for something like that, a lot of what makes a good source image is, like I said, not too much information, not too dense. Then your other question, which I'm now briefly blanking on. Sorry, Judith. Would you mind repeating that?
Yes, it was the question of creating tactile graphics, how accessible is the process of creating the graphics? At what point do you need some sighted assistance, and how much can you do without sighted assistance?
Thanks for repeating that. I'm sorry about that. So what I would say for accessibility, all of the software that I've used is accessible with JAWS or another screen access software. However, when it comes to doing something like what I'm describing, when it comes to editing images, that is pretty much by definition a sighted task. You know, deciding whether or not to show pillars on a map is very difficult to do without sighted help, at least. But if it's a question, if you're working with somebody that has some residual vision, they'll find it more useful. You can certainly label things and work with images that have been created and fit them into a text if you're doing a text and a braille and a tactile graphic document. But the process that's at the heart of creating tactile graphics, which is creating or editing images for them to make good tactile graphics, is in fact a sighted process, and that's just the nature of editing images as technology stands right now. Where I would bring in a blind colleague is, once I have a draft ready of an image, then I will run that off an embosser and then talk it over with that person, see what needs to be added, what needs to be removed, what's legible, and so forth. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. I think a good example of something that really requires and works well with team input from all aspects of the process, because it is quite a complex process.
Quite so. Are there any other questions folks have? Anything about creating tactile graphics and projects?
Well, Well, it looks like, I think we're about at the end of the questions. I'm not seeing anything more coming through. If anybody does have some last questions, please feel free to enter them in the chat room, and we can pass those on to Clara. But I have to say this has been a very interesting presentation altogether, and certainly has increased my knowledge of not just the technicalities behind behind tactile graphics, but also some of the issues which come up around that, and the decision-making process obviously is a lot more involved than I had certainly thought it was in that instance. So the last question that I am seeing up there is, will we be getting a list of all these resources emailed to us? Yes, Rhonda, thank you. We will be working with Clara to get those resources, and we will send those through to you. So absolutely, I think those resources are worth hanging on to. We don't want to lose sight of them at all. So I think at this stage, unless there's anything else, the time has come to really thank Clara so much for what she's presented to us today. It's been a great presentation all around, and I really do appreciate your input onto that. We realize that you probably will have many more questions for our speakers and as we finish off the session. So if you do have any, please feel free to either contact us directly. Your local regional ADA center is available to you at the telephone number, which is 800-949-4232. That's 800-949-4232, and that's Voice and TTY. And yes, we will be we are recording this session, so the audio and feedback of this will be archived and will be on our website within probably about a week or so, so give us a little bit of time to get that up and going. And in fact, all of our past webinars are on the website. And Celestine, perhaps I can ask you just to put the website on the chat room for us, and we'll confirm the name of that. We will also be sending around an evaluation link, which would be great if you folk would please let us know how we've done. And that link is http://ada-conferences.com. I've got the wrong link here, so don't worry about that link. We'll send that link to you and let you know what that is in the next few days. But other than that, this is great, and we look forward to seeing you at our next webinar, which will be on the 10th of April, and we have Carl Groves from DEC Systems who will be talking to us and really looking into the whole field of web accessibility and what does it mean and how well is it going now after so many years of Section 508. So we look forward to seeing you there. And Clara, if you have any last comments, we'd love to just once again thank you and pass the microphone back to you for a moment.
Thanks so much, Judith. It's been a real pleasure to do this webinar. It's certainly a new format for me, and I expect that you'll get some really interesting insights from Carl Groves for the next webinar. So thanks again, and I hope it's been useful. Feel free to pass on any questions if anybody has any further questions. Thanks.
Thank you so much again, Clara. And one last thing before we go, I would like to pass my thanks on to one person in particular. That is Celestine Willis, who has been with us for the last few years, really helping behind the scenes on what we've been doing. Celestine, you've been absolutely wonderful. We couldn't have done this without you. And I know that you're moving on to other greater things, and we will miss you very much, but thank you so much for all of your help. And for all of those who are still on the session, we look forward to seeing you again in April, and thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. You could just click on the X up in the top of the window to close out your session.